to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they gonna say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're gonna make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, welcome to the Session Giants. I'm tomorrow. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 4.25 now. S&P futures down 14. They were just down a lot more than that. I'm just getting bouncing right back. Lou, how are you, bud? What's
good
going
morning,
on in your
sir.
World?
I'm doing well.
Good.
It's, lovely. We're having lovely weather here. Just to give you a picture of what the Rockies look like, it's about 70 degrees each day. I go out, take a little walk in a nice breeze, and we're supposed to get snow on Monday.
Is that good?
Any moisture here is good. So I'm not of the opinion, you know, that the cold weather is a problem if it brings moisture. So that generally is the rule. You get a temperature swing like that. Cold weather means rain or snow. So it's just funny at this time of year. This is where you see the 40 or 50 degree temperature swings in 24 hours.
Didn't you have like 1.25, 1.25 regular snowpack this year? You had a over normal, so that's a good thing.
Certain places in the mountains did. I mean, it's what's really funny is, you know, you see how snow drives an economy. I mean, every week I would be aware of the snowpack when the skiing season was on because of the just because of the activity here. So you always knew what it was. Breck went over 300 inches in February, which is very early for it. And I don't think we have quite as much moisture down here in Denver, but up in the mountains, my recollection is there's a pretty good snowpack up there, which is good. I mean that means fire danger is down and lots of water in the reservoirs. At least one of my former clients, will be thrilled because it means the mines that he owns will be filling up with water, and he actually has a purification system set up that allows him to pump, I think it's 17 or 18 miles of tunnels that fill up with water, and he every spring, and he pumps that water out, filters it, clears it, cleans it, and then puts it into the water system of one of the localities here in Denver.
Really?
Yeah,
that's cool.
It's a really smart idea. It's a way of capturing, you know, up to that point, what you got was the mines would fill up with water, and you'd get a slow leaking or leaching out over months, years. Well, this guy said, you know what, that's a renewable resource, and I can pump it out of there since I own the property and I own the water rights. And he pumps it out starts pumping it out every spring, and I mean, it's, I don't know, 50, 60,000 acre feet, which is not an insignificant number. And that goes into a municipal water system after it's been filtered and treated.
Well, for those of you that aren't big on Western geography, the two halves of the state have been since day one, have essentially fought over the water because as the storms go up to one side of the western slope of the divide, you dump all the snow and the eastern side gets usually nothing unless the storm comes from another direction, right? And it doesn't last. So everything on the west side of the divide is rocky Colorado River drainage that basically heads to Lake Mead, and the water is used in California and used in Arizona, which pisses the Colorado people off big time. And the other side is Platte River drainage, which most of the time you can pretty much walk through the Platte River. It's like a foot deep, right? So
yeah, oh yeah, yeah. It's it goes through downtown Denver, and I'm actually not too far from where my house is. Is the headwaters of the lower Platte River, and at the end of this gorgeous canyon, and there's a dam there now. 11 Mile Canyon and 11 Mile Reservoir, I believe. And
well, we went.
That river flows then from there up north, because it's on the east side of the Continental Divide, flows up north, connects, I think, into Denver, the Platte just outside of Denver, or up in there somewhere, and then that river flows through Denver all the way across Nebraska and into the Missouri.
It basically is the valley, you can ford it
you know, by rolling up your pant, taking your shoes off and rolling up your pant legs.
Well, it essentially is the valley that both the railroad was built on and I-80 is built on.
Yeah, it's not even a valley. It just follows the river channel, because that was the migration path going west. If you drive that route much, and I used to drive it when I lived in Chicago and we'd come out here regularly, I drove it, you know, 8 or 9 times a year. If you drive that route, you will see off to the side and in various places, there's a national park, I think, called the Wagon Wheel or Wagon Ruts National Park. Anyway, the ruts from the Conestoga wagons and the other wagons that were used to move people, you know, along the Oregon Trail, that those ruts are still there, and they're not far from the I-80 path there, because they were all following the Platte River for water.
Well, for the people like Matt Weber, who actually, poor Matty gets used as my foil, they think everything is always better today. When the people built the Transcontinental Railroad, and they had a bunch of guys. Actually, a few guys surveyed the route, basically getting their asses chased by Indians the whole time. And they put the, other than intentional horseshoe bends in there to add a few miles, because they're getting paid by the mile. People don't change much, do they, Lou? And the I-80 was essentially surveyed by satellite, correct? And virtually every, you know, it's been there a while, but pretty much modern equipment. What are they, a mile apart?
I'm sorry, what is a mile apart?
I-80 and the railroad?
They're close. I mean, you can, again, if you drive that route all the time, you will see. I'm always impressed by trains that are, you know, have a lot of cars in them. You'll see train cars or train loads that look a mile long.
Oh, yeah. I drove out there, Lou, and I stopped in this one old town. Of course, I stopped for a burger, and let's put it this way. I was younger, and they had just stopped serving food, and I said, you know, I'm kind of hungry. The lady bartender went back and made me a sandwich just for me. What do you think of that, Lou? It was pretty good, too. Anyway, the guy next to me is playing all these video games. He had forearms like Popeye. He's a track guy. And his job was he had, like, 30 miles of the railroad. He got to the point where those miles were his miles. Had to make sure the tracks were fine, and there was any kind of a derailment or a problem, it was his baby, and he was fascinated by it. And they had so many trains, Lou, that if you had a farm or something along the way, you almost couldn't get your car onto the main line, or because they wouldn't stop.
Yeah,
they all go exactly 55 miles an hour. And I think he said they were 20 minutes apart, all the way west. This is back when you had mass amounts of unit trains with the coal and everything.
That's what those mile-long trains are transferring.
Yeah.
They're coming from the coal fields of Wyoming. And in any event, that's a long, flat, dull drive.
Oh, God, yeah.
And it's one that I was just as happy to make at night as I was during the daytime, because the scenery was just about the same.
You know, I will freely tell people when my people are doing well, and I'll freely tell people when I was a blithering idiot. And I will say I didn't have any customers at the time, Lou, but I was trading. Matty, you'll love this. I was trading the OEX pit. This had to be 19, I'm going to say 84, 85, somewhere in there. And let's put it this way. We all had money. Not big money, but for guys that were 30-some years old, we all had dough. And So somebody floats the idea. They just were coming in with this new thing called cell phones. And I don't know if you remember back, man, I don't know if you do, Matty, but to make a cell phone call when you were on the road, you might as well drop your pants and say, go at it, because it could be 25 hours to access the cell just for that call, right, Lou?
Yeah, well, no, that's right.
Well, they were auctioning off these cells, and some guy in the pit said, we should buy one of these cells that are going up. And a few guys got involved. I don't think too many, because nobody really understood it. But he got other investors, and I think they got the cell in Kearney, Nebraska, or some damn place. Lou, I'm going to say there could not have been a more profitable piece of real estate and a more profitable enterprise than that cell. Every single trucker had to use it. Way after most of the plans had virtually every state, it had to be the last spot. I remember going skiing and making a phone call, and I get my bill. It was still $10. I'm going, you bastard, you got me again. And I could have owned the thing, right? How much money do you think that place made?
Well, I don't know, but remember how fast once they, you know, the need to talk or the ability to talk on the road to somebody other than yourself is pretty strong. And so think about how fast CB radios, became commercially available, think how fast CB radios took off once people figured out they could talk to each other.
CW McCall, Lou, remember? We got us a convoy.
And so those things exploded, and as soon as cell phones became economically, you know, within reach of the average person, you know, they just took over. And
I haven't driven that way in so long. How did they ever take over the CB radio? How do you know how to talk to the guy in front of you? Well, you can in the CB.
I'm sorry.
But how do they take over?
But once the cell phones became available, you didn't need to talk to the guy in front of you. You could talk to your brother, your girlfriend, your wife, your husband, your dog. I mean, whoever you wanted to talk to. But the whole point of the CB radio thing was you know, you had a way of communicating if there was a problem. I mean, that's what a lot of people bought them for. But once you got the thing and you had it turned on and you listened to this incredible. It's these instant communities that formed as you were driving long distances, because you would hear, you know, you would hear truckers talking to each other, you'd hear cars talking to the truckers, and you'd pick up the call signs, and then you'd just insert yourself into the conversation. And this little 5 to 10 mile bubble of radio, radio transmission distance or effective radio range, this little 5 to 10 mile bubble of moving vehicles would just go across the country. And I made a lot of cross country drives in the 70s with a CB radio, and you'd get on the highway and settle in, and you'd listen to the chatter and figure out who was who.
But there was a whole,
and see where the cars were and who was talking, and then start chatting.
But it was a whole ecosystem of where the police were, what the road conditions were, where a good place to eat was. Where the hookers were, literally, and which if you could get yourself a hooker and get a meter at a truck stop, how did any of that get replaced by a regular phone?
All those communities, that those little self-forming communities. My roommate was he's got a PhD in industrial organizations and industrial psychology. Said this is one of the most fascinating things to understand. Is that these little human groups would form up, get cohesive, and then you know, you had somebody to talk to, you know, some kind of bond. Once the radio or the cell phones became ubiquitous, you could have, and I should be shot for using a word like that at 5:20 in the morning. Once these things became ubiquitous, the phones did. This information became, you know, more shareable or easier to share, but you know, less likely to pick up. So, I mean, the community broke down once you were no longer talking to people immediately around you.
Well, if you had one in your car now,
I don't know how. I mean, for truckers, that information, you know, retained its usefulness, and they still talk to each other. But for the average driver, that kind of information didn't become available really until your phones got smart and you could get on the internet. And then I don't know if you've used Google Maps lately on cross country drives. I have, and it's astounding how much information now is being pumped into your phone. Whether cars on the side of the road, police, weather activity, all kinds of stuff, and it just flows into the phone without you even having to.
My brother bought a truck, so I of course drove him up there, and we went over to state of Illinois office to get the title change and so forth. And he went on this other. What's the other one, Matty? Waze.
Yes, Waze.
And right.
I think that's right.
How does that thing know?
Waze and Google Maps are the two principles.
Well, that thing knows where all the traffic is, and it actually moved us down some side streets. It got us where we were going a lot faster than I ever would have got there. How does that thing know that there's traffic?
It knows by crowd. It's basically crowdsourcing traffic knowledge. So if you're a Waze user, your information, it knows where you're going. So it knows this direction. But more importantly, it has hundreds, thousands of other Waze users and other GPS users who are in cars, and it keeps a running total of where traffic is moving, what the average speed is on city streets, and as those average speeds drop, it starts routing people off onto other directions. And my first exposure to this, and I may have mentioned this on the air, but it's just one of these technology gotcha moments. My first exposure to this was when I was coming back from St. Louis to Chicago. And I was on, I-55 there?
Yep.
And I'm going north, and I've got Waze on, and all of a sudden, Google Maps actually was the source at that point. And as I'm driving along, all of a sudden it says, take the next exit. I'm on I-55. There are no other major roads anywhere near us. I'm cruising along at about 70, and it says take the next exit. So I thought, all right, what the hell? So I get off, and I could see nothing. Traffic is screaming along. We're all driving, 20 miles an hour over the speed limit. And I get the exit instructions. I thought, what the hell? So I get off the road, get onto a side road. Detected me onto a side road, and I'm driving along the side road at 55 miles an hour, and I look over, and I can see now ahead, off to the left, a plume of smoke. And as I'm driving along, I can look over, and I can just see, like 4 miles of stopped cars and this plume of smoke, because there had been a wreck, a bad one, and with a fire, and the traffic had shut down, and the Google algorithm had recognized the fact that hundreds of Google Map users were all stopped on I-55, and it knew at that point the faster route was to vector me off onto a side road. And that was an epiphany. And so at that point I said, you know what, I'm not going to waste any more time with sort of guessing or my own personal knowledge, even on streets that I know. If I'm going somewhere, I'm going to activate the map function or the Waze function just for the traffic information. So it's constantly sampling that stuff. And then people put information in. So now that if I'm driving on Google Maps, and Waze did this for a long time automatically, Google Maps does it now automatically as well. If I'm driving along, I'll get a notice, police trap up ahead, or police car parked up ahead, and then as you drive by, it asks you, is it still there? And if you tap on the screen, yes, if you see the thing. And so it understands.
Okay, so there is some back and forth.
Yeah, it's interactive. You among, and 500 other people have reported that the car is still there, or the police are still there, or the traffic accident is still there. And so it keeps a continuous update. But it's it's crowdsourcing.
Luke, can I shift some gears? I'm going to shift gears a little bit. On you a little bit, because I want to shift gears a little bit. We have some time before the break. I have some interesting virus questions.
I want to congratulate you. We've gone, 25 minutes without talking about the Wuhan flu?
Well, that's kind of where I want to go, but in a different direction than I would with anybody else. Because you keep talking about changes in society, and Fauci's talking about nobody's going to shake hands ever again, which is BS, I think. But who knows? But my concern is on a couple levels, Lou. First, somebody that I know, shall we say, works at a factory that, right now they shoved all their business aside and all they're doing is making parts for ventilators. They put everything at a top priority. So somebody in their place, all of a sudden, somebody lives at home, the parent tests positive for the virus. So the kid has no idea whether he's got it or not. They send him off on his own to one of the testing stations, which is a whole morning operation. And in 2 days, like, he's going to find out. And from what I understand, then other people then get the okay to go to the same place and wait in line and God knows what. Now, this is an operation that's building parts that we allegedly need, if you listen to people on TV all day long. Including the president.
Maybe not.
But maybe not. Well, that's, yeah, maybe
not.
But I'm saying, contrast this, Lou, with 6 weeks ago, everybody in the Bulls, everybody in the Lakers, everybody in the Cubs, they didn't have to go anywhere and get a test. The van showed up there. Everybody got their test. They got the results in 24 hours, whatever the hell it is. Are enough people, am I the only person getting pissed off by this? Or this has become one of the most, if you pay attention, this has become one of the most class conscious deals I've ever seen, where you tell people to make sure you're still cooking at the restaurant. I want to do my carryouts, knowing they're 3 feet apart in the kitchen. That's okay, as long as you can't see them, as long as they're not going to infect you. Yet anybody near you better. If Lori Lightfoot sees somebody in front of her on the lakefront, they got to get out of her way. I mean, is this as crazy as I think it is, or am I just being overly sensitive?
No, I mean this is. and you're seeing this with Lightfoot's attempt to try to racialize another politician's attempting to try to racialize the disease. Any kind of pandemic, any kind of rapid disease spread here is going to have a disproportionate effect on people with fewer means. And that's just the way it is. You're not going to, and that's true of anything. That's true of any natural disaster.
Well, but let's.
If you're poor, if you don't have a lot of money, you can't insulate yourself from the effects of this.
Well, I say it every day, Lou, and I don't want to say it. It'll be a Cliff Notes version today. But what happened in China, what happened in Italy, what is happening in the African American community is very, very similar. You have multi generational families in one house, and you send people home without testing them. To me, that's stone cold ignorant, and I don't know how you do it.
But okay, so the testing is not going to prevent you from getting the disease,
right?
I understand that poorer communities are more susceptible to having people who are overweight, clinically obese, with diabetes, with other underlying health conditions, and if that's you. And you're over the age of 60, you're in trouble with this disease. You are in a very high risk group with this disease. And that's an unfortunate fact of life. If you're male and over 60, you're in a target zone here. But nobody's talking about that, and I don't really understand why not. It's killing, the last statistic I saw was, it's killing men in that age group at a rate of about 2 to 1. This is an unfortunate fact of being poor.
Lou, haven't you paid any attention? Lou, haven't you paid any attention to the politics lately? Nobody wants old white guys.
Maybe that's the case. I mean, I had a small discussion with a friend here in Denver who was lamenting she made the comment that, my God, it's targeting the black community, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, I don't know what the death numbers are. But the scourge of the black community, at least in Chicago, was crime and murder. And we don't hear anybody, we didn't hear people talking about that. I mean, you hear it in spurts, but you don't hear people making a big deal out of it. It's perceived as being internal. The minute you can figure out a way to victimize or portray the community as victims, and again, something to bash the president with, then it gets press, and then it gets play. I just said, yeah, let me know when the death toll from this virus, you know, reaches the annual death toll and murder rate, shooting rate of downtown Chicago, and then maybe we'll talk about a scourge. But the short answer is, if you're living close together in a city, and you can't self-isolate, you don't have the ability to self-isolate, you've got to go out, you can't buy 2 weeks or 3 weeks worth of groceries at one time, you have to go out into the environment, you are going to have yourself, you're going to find yourself at a significant risk. And I'm, that's what it is.
We'll talk about this more for a break. S&P Futures now just took a dive down 21. Again, we got jobless claims there. We're going to get another 5 or 6 million person number. We will see. NASDAQ Futures down 59. They were down, Spoos were down 2, like literally 2 minutes ago. We just dropped 20 points. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering 3 of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber. Mr. Lou Michaels with us on the phone. Lou, you see how hard it is to keep your headlines, with you in a market like this? Stock futures are flat as investors brace for weekly jobless claim. They're not flat. They're down 18 points. Dow's down 133. NASDAQ futures are down 47. They were flat like 3 minutes ago, but you got to keep up on this stuff. You got to keep up on it. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 64 to 0.6. FTSE up 81.4. These guys, this is coming in a little late, I would imagine. They're probably down a little bit since this little drop we just had. Kakarand up 1, call that flat. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 7, call that flat. Shanghai up 10.3%. Hang Seng up 329, 1.3%. Australian stocks up 3%. Yesterday was a big move up after, it's sort of eerie. And here we are on Thursday. On Tuesday, we were up 95 points. We're doing the show. We finished down, and yesterday we were up to 95 points that we were up Tuesday morning and gave away. So we essentially closed last night almost the exact same spot we were Tuesday morning, which is sort of odd. The bonds, 0.73, so down 3 ticks. I'm saying that's not a bond, that's the rate. The bund, minus 0.34. Japan, plus 0.015, so gaining on it a little bit. Oil up $1.23 to $26.32. Now that's the same price we had yesterday. So it went down during the day yesterday and it's come back up this morning. Brent up 90 cents, $33.74. Natural gas, $1.78. RBOB gas, 69 cents. We've got gold up 18 bucks. Oh, 17.02. Yes. Silver up 25 cents, 15.46. Copper unchanged, cannot get out of its own way, 2.25. And individual stocks, moving, not a whole lot on anything here. We got Home Depot down $1.82. We got 3M down 125, Apple down 187. Nothing major there, just pretty much all of them down right now in the industrial average. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Pretty quiet so far on Lakeshore Drive in both directions. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower, Stevenson, Southside expressways are looking good. As everyone continues to work from home, those that can, and it's affecting the traffic in a positive way for the most part. Low travel times across the area. We have one crash that's in the northwest suburbs, Route 390 tollway eastbound at Mitchell Boulevard. There is a crash blocking the left lane. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, some sunshine early, then some rain moving in this afternoon and evening, a high of just 46, so much colder than it's been the last couple of days. Wind chills will remain in the 30s, so you'll probably want to wear a coat today. Right now it's sunny and 41, going up to a rainy high of 46. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 73 today. Right now it's clear and 53. In sports, the Bulls are reportedly hiring Nuggets general manager to be the Bulls' new vice president of basketball operations. Arturis Karnasovas has been a successful GM with the Nuggets and has them as one of the top teams in the Western Conference, and he is leaving that job to take over to be the head honcho with the Bulls. Also, a couple of notes on this day in sports history, Chief, since we don't have a lot of real sports to talk about. April 9th, 1913, Ebbets Field opened in Brooklyn. And the Phillies topped the Dodgers 1-0 that day, but Ebbets Field was open and home of the Brooklyn Dodgers for about 40 years before they moved. On this date in 1965, it was the first Astrodome game. It was an exhibition game, and it was the Astros over the Yankees 2-1, and Mickey Mantle hit the first indoor home run, even though it didn't count because it was an exhibition game. Chief?
Really? They actually tried to grow grass in there initially in the... And the ceiling was glass, but nobody could see the ball during the day through the sun coming through the glass. So they ended up having to paint the glass and basically invent AstroTurf. Is that correct, Lou?
I think that's right.
Yeah, because the original idea was they were going to grow grass because it was going to be glass. And then it became not so much. Lou, I have to say that
it's a terrible, terrible surface to play on, I'll tell you that.
Well, it was the first iteration. I mean, the stuff now is like way better, but still not grass, but
it was like playing on a indoor outdoor carpeting laid over your parents' outdoor patio.
Yeah.
We practiced on it when I was at the academy. We played against the University of Houston and got on the field for a quick practice, and it was I couldn't believe people were actually playing football on it.
Well, they had like what a quarter inch of padding, didn't it, or something?
Didn't feel like that. It felt like indoor outdoor carpeting.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it had concrete.
When they originally had it, Jack Brickhouse had it up in the booth. And it had like a quarter inch of padding. That was it. It wasn't, you know, any real stuff. It was like playing with
the other problem with it was the terrible skin infections you got from the stuff. I mean, it was a, you know, instant red burn, and you know how sore and how inflamed and infected that stuff gets. And think about a surface that's got people, you know, rubbing into it, you know, over and over and over again, and the amount of, you know, the number of germs and everything else that was present.
COVID-19, Lou, COVID-19.
Yeah. Anyway, just to go back to what we were talking about real quick, I don't want to confuse, you know, race with poverty. The virus is going to strike, the virus is going to really hurt, you know, impoverished, poor places, and then within that population, if you have old people over 60 who are male with lots of underlying health conditions, then that population is going to get ravaged. And I think I saw a number out of New York, and this is like a week and a half ago, which means the data is probably totally useless. But a number out of New York, out of 200 deaths or 300 deaths in New York that were reported, only 14 did not have an underlying health condition,
right,
that, you know, the doctors were aware of.
Yeah, it's that, but so there are
serious underlying health.
You get enough of the ancillary cases of people younger and stuff where it's still something to be afraid of. You know what they're saying? I was reading a lot about last night is what you were talking about with the 1919 pandemic. Some younger people are having the same sort of reaction. They are reacting enough to where they're causing their own death by you know, the lungs filling up and stuff. So some people are almost getting the same reaction as 1919. It's very rare, but it has happened.
Yeah, the last report that I saw, the last sort of scientific analysis I saw, indicates that the virus attacks the ability of hemoglobin to absorb oxygen, and that there's this cascading effect then to the rest of your organs and the lungs as these iron ions, which are apparently released as a result of the virus's shutdown and binding to hemoglobin. These iron ions flood your body and create all kinds of problems with other organs, and then of course the hypoxia, and that's how the virus works initially, and then you get a cascading effect of organ shutdown and other failures. So it's a pretty interesting, you know, physiological effect about which we don't really know a lot. But I continue to remain optimistic about chloroquine, because the studies that I've read on it, and again, this is all available popular literature, the studies that I've read on it that indicate that it's not effective are studies that are with a very small populations or with populations that were already very sick, and they started administration of it. And I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that in fact we've hit on something that can provide significant mitigation of the damage.
By the way, Lou, you heard it here first. A lot of these ingredients that are active in that drug are in black tea.
Okay. I didn't know that, but that makes sense.
I heard that from a hospital worker. Question for you. When we start the class part here, which is every day I keep thinking I should stop talking about this, but it gets worse and worse. I mean, we constantly have people like Bill Gates, who's down on TV for a half hour. Bill Gates has a house, 40 houses to go to. Bill Ackman can short the market and tell everybody we should keep the economy closed for 6 months so you can have another $1 billion. But the idea, Lou, that when you shut people off at home just so they don't infect you, I think you need to ask people what home is like. I mean, they're talking about letting people out of the jail here, you know, a misdemeanor, and sending them home. Well,
yeah.
Where's home? Well, I don't have a home. It'll be the street. Well, that's not a good idea. I mean, Lori Lightfoot last night, yesterday, and she's getting way too used to telling people what to do. I'm not saying it's a bad idea.
You're watching,
a good idea.
I mean, this is something you and I talked about offline in the email. The constitutional implications of watching these little Martins, you know, thousands of Martinets surface in our political system is really troubling for me. I mean, we got too many, way too many people who just think they can rule by fiat. And that's where I know that's where she is. I don't know how she thought it was a good idea to get her $500 haircut after banning everybody else from getting any kind of hairstyling or hair treatment or haircuts is well, it goes back to what I think is the general feeling of Chicago politicians, which is they feel the people who are voting for them are idiots, and they can pretty much tell them anything, and nothing will happen. There'll be no accountability.
Well, Lou, I don't exactly hang around in the black community anymore. I used to, when I was a kid, I did, but the community was nothing like it is now. But I go through there enough, and I have somewhat of an understanding. No, nothing like if somebody was from there or anything. But maybe a little more understanding than the average bear, a little more. But so now you have people. One of the reasons why you get a lot of shootings in the summertime at 3:30 in the morning is that people are jammed into housing, and it's not a pleasant experience in the house. So people are outside. All right, so duh. And now you close essentially the bars. All right, but people are social. I mean, they're outraged where somebody's walking in the park. You know, a little,
for the listeners outside of Chicago, what Tom is referring to is Mayor Lightfoot, by fiat, closed all liquor stores and bars after what, 5 p.m.?
No, 9 o'clock as of yesterday. Package liquor stores. The bars are already closed. So I don't know how you tell people that. You know, if I park in front of my house and I walk out and somebody's walking along a little puppy, you know what, Lou, my instinct is to pet the puppy, and I'm probably going to be within 6 feet of the person. That's just the way people are. People are going nuts being home by themselves. Okay, I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm not. But when you, now you shut the bars. Now you have a couple of nice nights, and guess what?
And you shut the parks, which I thought.
And you shut the parks. So now you have a couple of nice nights, and guess what? Some of the guys are doing in the hood. If you drive by, you're going to see five or six guys standing out in front of a liquor store with a pint or two because the bars are closed. Now we got to close those places. These people don't have any place to go, Lou. And you know what? Last time I checked, as long as we're upright, we all got to be someplace.
Yep.
Evidently, you just got to be out of Lori Lightfoot's sight. I mean, is really what it comes down to.
Oh, we had the same thing happen here in Denver. I mean, the mayor, who I do not think highly of, but I think do not think highly of any of the Denver elected officials who are out of their depth on not just this issue, but pretty much every other urban planning issue you can imagine. But the mayor was driving around on Sunday or being driven around on Sunday with his armed bodyguard. And saw a bunch of people, you know, in the park playing softball and running and picnicking and everything else, and just said, "That's it, we're closing the parks." And by the way, we're shutting down all the liquor stores, and we're shutting down all the bars, and we're shutting down all the cannabis stores, you know, by fiat. Well, it just, again, because it offended him personally to see people out there.
They didn't pay attention to him.
And you're seeing this over and over again. I mean,
You know, what's the worst is the governor of Jersey is a dictator wannabe, but I could have been if I was a Gladys Kravitz.
He's not alone.
No, I could have been if I was a Gladys Kravitz, and Maddie didn't even know who the hell it is. We're driving back from Audrey's, and by myself in my truck, 6 feet away from everybody, I go past the forest preserves. They're packed with cars, Lou. But everybody's out walking, you know, ones and twos, fishing 20 feet apart. You got to be someplace. I have a question for you. This is more serious. Well, this is, we're talking about it serious, but
it may be. I'm just going to say that about 90% of these edicts are unconstitutional.
Yeah, well, but now we have, but what are people, and yet you can, people argue. We had Russell Rhodes on yesterday, who I think is the most brilliant man I've ever met, said at times like this, we actually need a dictator because people need to pay attention when somebody says something. So Russell, you got to be kidding. And Manny goes, Chief, you don't understand, Russell's just tongue-in-cheek. And Russell goes, no, I'm not.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand that the Constitution is not a suicide pact. That's a famous statement in a Supreme Court case, and I get that. But the short answer is, we're not in, as I've said many times on the show, this is a dry run for a really serious epidemic.
Well,
we're not there yet.
We have one person on the show who knows more about history than even you and me. You know more than me. Jan Flanagan, who's on Monday, sends me this stuff yesterday. Evidently, in 1929, there was a pretty dramatic pandemic where we had in Chicago hospitals something like 700 people died by the first week of December. So it was more than this. Actually, we had more population. It was more than this. And nobody shut anything down. They just rolled through it. And I don't think it was as deadly. But my question to you is, they had your buddy on yesterday, Mark Cuban. You know, and here's another guy. He could stand in place in a 50,000 square foot house forever with people doing his lawn for him. But that's okay. He says that, and this is a legal question, Lou. He goes, I can't open up my basketball team until I'm absolutely convinced that there's like zero chance of one of my employees getting this thing. And we can't open up an arena till we can tell the fans that there's like zero chance of them getting this. Lou, there's not a zero chance of anything in life. There's not a zero chance of an asteroid not hitting me on the head walking home. I mean, there's no way on earth that this economy is going to stay shut until there's zero chance of anybody getting this disease. And I can't imagine that happening.
I know.
Does that mean if you go to a basketball game and come home with it, the basketball team's liable?
Well, there are a number of cases that are going to start getting filed on that. Second guessing the decision by people to stay open. Second guessing the decision to continue operations. I could see an NBA player suing a club, saying, "Hey, you should have shut us down sooner. Now I've got Wuhan flu, and what are we going to do?" I could see those kinds of cases coming out. Yes.
Well, I mean, do we honestly think that we are smarter and better than every bug now? That if it's a new bug, somebody should have seen it sooner. We shouldn't have got it.
Oh, are you kidding? Well, look at the stuff going on again. People railing against President Trump because, you know, there was somebody somewhere in November who said this thing was deadly and needed to be paid attention to. It's yes. The short answer to that is yes, and the longer answer is hell yes, because every lawyer and every plaintiff's lawyer in the country is now looking at these. The spread of this disease and saying, how can I sue somebody for not knowing or not guessing that they should have shut down 5 days sooner and let's look for information that should have informed that decision?
Well, I'm going to push back just a hair on that.
Hindsight's 20/20 here.
But I don't think, I'm getting this feeling that with this thing going on in Wuhan earlier than maybe you and I knew, okay, I have a distinct feeling that an awful lot of our business people who are eyes on the ground there and are pretty in tune with what's going on in China pretty much everywhere. I was reading some statistics over the weekend. There were 400,000 people came back and forth from China to this country after the thing broke in China, like way after. You can't tell me that these businesses didn't know that there was danger for their employees going back and forth.
My response to that is the Chinese officials were saying this is not a huge deal. The World Health Organization was saying this is not a huge deal. I mean, if you look at my Twitter feed and some of the other stuff, I was aware of this back in December. I was fascinated to see that this had come out back in December, but I thought it was the flu. And I thought that's, you know, this was just another Chinese sourced, you know, flu variant or respiratory illness that, you know, might be a little more serious than like the basic flu we get out of there every year, but not the kind of epidemic that we're looking at obviously now. We don't know what to make of it. There were pictures. Yeah, well,
The stuff I was reading this weekend, Lou, and again, this is not a shot at Trump, because there's no way he could have. It's not a shot at Obama. It's not a shot at Bush. But it's a shot against. There was some pretty damning. Evidently, after the president shut down travel to China, which was actually after some of the airlines did, but he shut it down, okay? I'll give him the kudos on that. There's 40,000 people that came after that on, like, other airlines or something.
Yeah.
And then they interviewed some of these people that came in, some in Seattle, which, of course, had one of the first hotspots. And the people were saying, yeah, there's this guy, he's supposed to be asking me if I was in Wuhan province. All he did was ask me what I did in China. He didn't really write anything down, never took my temperature. And off I went. I mean, he goes, it was like they didn't believe it. It was the people we hired. It's just like the TSA. You hire them and they don't even make you go through the thing. Now, whether you should or you shouldn't, that's another story. But if they're there, then you should go. Evidently, the efficiency and the up and down the chain was horrendous.
Yes, that shouldn't surprise anybody. If you've come in from international travel within the last 6 months, and I did, I have. I mean, you're not. We're not. The execution of this stuff, notwithstanding the pronouncements of the people at the top of the food chain, the execution of this stuff is really troubling. And I agree with you. Absolutely.
Well, how does that get there? Because
can we talk for a second? Can we talk about the Navy situation with the aircraft carrier?
You got 4 minutes, yes. How does that guy not know that people are taping his speech?
Well, okay, so let's back up.
Yeah.
So the commander of this aircraft carrier is upset at his superiors because they are not responding fast enough to a health situation on his ship.
Which is a problem.
He sends out a message that not only embarrasses the Navy, but reveals the combat capability of his vessel, one of 10 that we have, reveals that capability outside of Navy channels, sends it on an unsecure email that he knows is going to get leaked to the press, that he's inviting to have leaked to the press, because he wants public pressure put on the Navy officials to fix his ship. That gets you fired in almost any military organization, especially an officer acting at that level of responsibility. That gets you fired, and it should. I don't want aircraft carrier commanders or bomb wing commanders or fighter wing commanders or army division commanders making the decision that, hey, I'm going to subvert the chain of command by doing this. Now, I think the Navy was right to fire the guy.
Were they right to ignore him?
They didn't ignore him. But even if they did, they were right to fire him.
So at no point does he get to say, my people are dying and the idiot above me won't listen.
At no point does he get to say that out in an unsecure line of communication.
So what does he do?
He stays within the chain of command and he raises the issue as best he can. But by going outside the chain of command, he knowingly, and I'm sure this guy knew exactly what he was doing, he knew he was going to get cashiered. He put that the interest of his sailors and his particular ship, his loyalty to them, above his loyalty to the service, and I think, in a not very smart way, his obligation to try to protect, you know, combat readiness information. So that gets you fired, and I get that they had no choice but to fire him. I admire the man's loyalty to his crew; it's impressive, But it's one of these situations where the Navy's got its loyalty and he's got his, and the two are in conflict.
Well, the guy who got the first letter's got to go too.
I don't know. I don't necessarily say that, because the guy who's got the first letter of other considerations. I mean, it may be that we wanted that aircraft carrier in a particular position, and the fact that they had a virus on board that was making some people sick, you know, suck it up, Buttercup. You're in the Navy. You know, we that carrier in this position. It may be that that was the case. Regardless, I don't want ship captains making those decisions. That's for people way above his pay grade. So yeah, you would keep that ship in play. There are situations I can think of right away where you would keep that ship in play, even if there was an outbreak on it. So in any event, he's got to go, and he knows that. I don't think there's any question this captain that he was ending his career when he made this move. All right, that's fine. Then I cannot for the life of
you. Only got a minute, Luke. So you only got a minute, bud.
Okay, why that guy got it, why the acting Secretary of the Navy got on an airplane, flew 8,000 miles at $250,000 cost to berate basically the crew and the captain in that way. And it's a tone deafness, and that guy should have been fired and was fired, obviously. That guy should have been fired the minute that hit the streets, and I'm appalled at the judgment expressed there. And I don't know this guy's background, but that was a terrible, terrible move on his part, and he paid for it.
Maddie, can you give me another minute here?
Sure.
Real quick, because I'll tell you a story about going around the chain of command, Lou, when it was Enrico Fermi came over here with all this stuff. He'd already won a Nobel Prize, and he showed up, and this is in 1941 or whatever, shows up at wherever the Navy was, in some admiral's place, and he's sitting out there for a while waiting, and the admiral says, "Who's out there?" And the whoever the other guy was, the captain says, "Some waps out here want to talk about some crazy thing. You don't really have to see him." So they gave him basically the bum's rush. And months later, a friend of Fermi's got to Eleanor Roosevelt and got 10 minutes in front of the president. And the entire atomic industry was born basically on Roosevelt's shoulders. Now there's an incredible case of going outside the chain of command. What would have happened if he didn't?
Yeah, well, that's not this case. Fermi's not, and you know, if Fermi had worked for a particular company, maybe he would have been fired for doing that. I get that, you know. And there are certain situations where going outside the chain of command, you know, works, but 90% of the time it doesn't, and 100% of the time, if you do it within a military organization like this, you're going to get cashiered.
I understand.
Especially at this level.
I think that in this day and age, with this, we're not exactly at war. We're sort of exactly at war with this COVID. That whoever it was when he first heard this from the captain, he should have said to the Secretary of the Navy, "What do you want me to do? We sort of need the ship here. We sort of don't. We really need it here. We really don't. And these guys are really getting sick. What do you want me to do?" Well, is there any reason why you hold on to that one?
Right, and that's dithering, and I get it, it's wrong. And that's what that captain said: "I'm not going to put up with this anymore. I'm going to sacrifice myself to get my crew the treatment that it deserves." And the way he did so, basically ensured that he was going to get fired.
Well, you're probably, I'm sure you're right, Lou. It's you. I'm just saying that he probably thinks he did the right thing to this day.
He absolutely thinks he did the right thing. This was a conscious, thoughtful decision by this guy. He's a smart guy. You don't get to that job without being pretty smart and pretty good.
Is that pretty much the top of the pyramid, Lou, the commander of an aircraft carrier?
I'm sorry?
Is that pretty much the top of the pyramid, the commander of an aircraft carrier?
The commander of an aircraft carrier, yes. I think that's pretty much the top of a combat command operation, 5,000 people. You know, you're in the front line with your guys, and you've got a little piece of the United States of America sailing around out on the ocean. Yeah, you don't get much more autonomous and responsible than that.
All right, bud, thank you very much. Talk to you next week. Have a nice 3-day weekend, even though we can't do much. S&P futures down 21, NASDAQ futures down 57. So this is recent. Come back, we'll have Mr. Fari Hamzy.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, just my Weber on the board. S&P futures now down 22.75. They're like unchanged when we walked in, and all of a sudden, before last break, we dropped like 20 points. As the futures down 58, we're
good morning.
We're like 20 minutes away from the unemployment claims number, the number that I've been saying for 20 years on the radio that is never a tradable number, and all of a sudden, it's a tradable number. Ferrari, what do you think?
7 mil.
You think it's going to be 7?
7 mil is my estimate.
What was last week, 6.1 or something?
Mm,
I think it was.
I forget what was up there. It was that? Probably, yeah, but about the same, yeah, I think so. Yeah, because we had 3 before, we came to 12, 10, so somewhere in there is about there last week. So, it's gotta be that, between 7 and 9 is the estimate I have. More closer to 7.
So do you think if, all the people that have small businesses listen to Trump and Munchkin, talk today about the checks are in the mail, that they're actually gonna get a check or no?
No check in the mail.
No check in the mail.
Last week, right, it was 6.6 million.
It's a problem. A lot of banks are involved. You're already getting comments from them that, I think maybe other than Wells Fargo, there are issues there, and so most likely no.
Well,
remember, these are tea leaves, right?
I read some of the stuff yesterday, and in one section, it said that you could count as part of your payroll anybody you paid with a 1099 form, so essentially an outside contractor. And five places further down, it said that the person was responsible for doing it themselves. I mean, there's a lot of
Yeah, why would you want to pay an outside contractor? Supposing you pay them when you're done with them. Remember, you can't set their hours, right? It's job based or activity based, but it's not coming to location at a fixed time and doing a fixed task. This is not an outside contractor. So if he's done his outside work, he's done. You pay them. It doesn't make sense to support 1099. Unless it's a slush fund.
Fari, how much?
Does that make sense?
Okay, for the first time, maybe. Maybe.
Fari, we're going to send you some proper gen.
But Fari Hamzy Inc. might actually get a chance to get a dollar from the federal government. And if it's an extra.
No, I would not. Of course not. Because I'd be 1099 all my life. So, no.
All right, just listen to me for a second. I'm saying for the first time, you might actually. Do you think that if Boeing writes this thing up in such a way where they get a little bit more than they deserve, they're going to bring it back?
No. No, I realize that, but it doesn't make sense. I'm not judging how the law is written. I'm just saying it doesn't make sense if it's written this way.
Well, the sense it would make is.
Does that make sense?
The sense it would make is if you
pay. Hold on. This is, Bill Gates now. Hold on. You got to hold one second.
Bill Gates has been on for an hour.
Pardon me?
Bill Gates has been on for an hour.
Okay. It's taped. I'll have it taped. This is on DVD. It's on TV. I'll catch you later. No worries.
He's a rich guy that has no idea what the rest of the world is like, and he's on there talking.
Oh, please. Don't say that. He knows a lot about infections. They've done a lot on infections, please.
He wants to shut the place down for a year because he doesn't want anybody to infect him.
Because he knows a lot about infections, and he's a very smart guy.
He
wouldn't be where he is if he wasn't smart. My problem is with all these Trump kids. They don't understand what's in front of us.
Just because you're smart in one area doesn't mean you're smart in another area, Fari.
But I understand that. But he's worked about last 20 years on overseas infectious diseases, especially malaria.
I understand. This isn't malaria.
And he's got an incredible team there. They did a special on his foundation like 2 years ago. Just that people just sit there who are available, they're working on projects. The depth and the spectrum of Rogers and infectious diseases is just amazing. So,
I have a
better CDC than your buddy Trump has.
I just have a real serious issue with somebody who owns 48 houses with 40,000 square feet. He could call his own in any one of them. He could live at home for 6 months like a king, telling other people to jam themselves up.
He doesn't own 48 houses. Who said that?
Well, whatever. He owns a few.
Yeah. He owns a few. And the one in, I have a friend of mine who's been a guest at his house in, Puget Sound. It's massive. I realize that. But
right.
He's not actually that. Do you know, he goes for his reading 1 week a year to a little cabin that he gets to by a boat.
Whatever.
But he rows over there or drive him over. One man, one boat, just morning stuff, going for like a water taxi. It's got one room, one kitchen. He goes his books there. So has no, and there's no phones, no internet, nothing.
Right.
Just power and water.
I don't need
to concentrate on what he's doing.
I don't need him.
It's a very, very, very highly focused individual. Have you ever been in meetings with him?
Fine.
I have people who have been.
Fine.
He's highly focused.
I'm all over that. I just don't. The guy, he's the greatest guy on earth. I just don't need him telling black people on the South Side to go jam up an apartment with 30 people in there for 6 months.
I agree with you. That I understand. He's not saying that either.
Well, he's saying, what are you talking about? He says everybody should stay home for 6 months, is what he said the other day.
He doesn't mean that you gotta be home. First of all, nobody lives 30 people to an apartment, first of all. You're being hyperbole.
Well, a lot of people have 7 and 8.
Okay. But obviously he's saying, keep your distance. Don't go out. Let's kill this thing.
I mean,
now, some common sense.
What he's saying is keep
too.
Your distance from
if
me.
You got 25 people in a couple of bedrooms, you're in trouble to begin with.
Okay.
So you have to get, you got to get you out of, sparse you out some areas.
The whole idea.
You're dicing and this.
No, I'm not dicing. When you sent people home.
Let's talk about real stuff.
When you sent people home in Italy to the multi-generational home, you killed all those old people. The politicians.
Oh, yeah.
Still.
See the special Into a Red Zone by Sky News? Oh, my God. One of the richest zip codes in Italy. The town is dead. It's been around 1,500 years. The town is dead.
All right. Let's talk about the market. What the? How do we go from down 1 to down 22 on the last break? Now, here we are, down 22.
Yeah. Well, something changed here. Listen, I was up around about 1-ish, and then around 5-ish. In between, a lot has changed.
Yeah.
And it looked like around 3 o'clock, maybe when England opened, something went nuts. Is Bojo okay or no?
They said he's doing better today. Matty, get the latest on him, will you? Boris?
Last time on Rachel Maddow, they had, I don't believe her, believe in her politics, but I do. She does incredible research that she did during the impeachment and stuff. And they all came through. I mean, she said happened. And this one, she was quoting a Mullen group, let me close this news, out of Seattle, the University of Seattle, the University of Washington. And they've been now that basically done modeling on the U.S. They're going by, and they did the States, and now they're going to European countries. I posted a picture. I posted a picture early this morning on Twitter. Maddie, you probably can see it. The data shows that, based on their modeling, England will outpace France, Spain, I'm going to bring it up right now, and Italy combined. United Kingdom, that's what they went to, Brexit. They have the same IQ as the Trump kids. They're going to be hit so badly, you have no idea.
Sorry, we have a...
You know why? Because they didn't tie down.
We have a listener from Britain, somewhere not in London, somewhere up north. I don't know what town it is.
Right.
Now, how she found us, I have no idea. She sends me an email a few weeks ago. She is a cancer survivor.
Okay.
They have been coming by her apartment and testing her for the virus every 2 weeks now for 2 months. None of that's happening here.
Their death total is skyrocketing.
I'm not saying it isn't, I'm saying in terms of...
By the way, Boris Johnson, 4 days now in the ICU, showing signs of improvement, is now sitting up in bed. But he's still in the ICU and this is now the fourth day.
Maybe he'll learn a lesson that he was behind, okay? Maybe he was behind. I don't expect him to admit it. They're from the same tribe. They will never admit they've done anything wrong.
Oh, okay, no.
Yeah, let's not go there.
The UK
that is special by Skynet. It was scary.
Well, I mean,
and everybody, because we hear that in the background that we're 12 years, 14 days behind them. Okay,
Harry, you're a mathematical guy. Would you go Harvard, Yale, Princeton? Princeton.
Please be careful.
I'm
not a Democrat.
So. I didn't say Rutgers. I said I kept you up there. This whole concept.
No, but Yale and Harvard are very, very.
Well, you know more about math than I do. But this whole idea is we think a lot of people are sick. We finally get some tests. God knows, because our idiots at the Center for Disease Control stopped all that a month ago. We've talked nothing about that. I mean, nothing but constantly about that. Now we start testing people. We find out they're sick. Why are we shocked? We know they're sick.
That, also, the death numbers. Do you know they've been burying people? Because they were never tested.
Right.
So, even though now they're finding out some of these, like, what was it, the FDNY was saying, they took 200 people out that were dead out of their apartments yesterday. And they all had symptoms. You could just look at their eyes. For example, you see the red wings, the red blood wings around your cornea. You gotta watch it. That's where the problem is.
I was reading.
I
was reading quotes from rural doctors this Saturday. We were home. I mean, because I've been behaving, been home and stuff. And I've been reading. Was reading quotes from rural doctors that said they had people die in December. They might have had other issues. Yes. Okay. Well, most of the people who are dying have had other issues. That's to be fair.
Right. Right. Well, there's some underlying issues.
But that, that's the way the world is, unfortunately.
Exactly.
But the guy said it was obviously a virus that I didn't recognize. And that was in December.
Well, that's right for myself. Yeah. Given the risk category I'm in, I haven't left since Valentine's Day. I've not left the house. I mean, I've gone for anything fun, anything extraordinary other than food and medicine. That's it. And food, just buy bulk. Not even every day. Just buy bulk at store and make. I'm beginning to cook. I haven't done cooking in ages, but you have to. No, the other night I made the brown rice with tahdik, which is the bottom of the rice pan. It comes very good. This as you know, Captain Tico now became full admiral. You know, he became vice admiral during the impeachment in December. This is time when Moscovich was out of town, and just he left town. I mean, at least one thing is loyal, right? Trump just moved him to full admiral. And much to dismay of Jared, because Jared had found out that Tico has been short all this time.
Just be careful.
We gave him food. We made him some rice, and we made him some locally raised, grass-fed, lamb shanks. Okay, slowly cooked. So he loved it. But I'm learning to cook.
Be careful.
Out here, people are not following any rules. They still think that virus comes in and looks at your balance sheet first. Come on, give me a break. We're gonna be hit here in Florida. Long story short, we have had people we have buried that we didn't know they had it.
Right.
What I'm talking about, your eyes, how they're picking it up. If you look at Chris Cuomo, because they do it. You know, he's speaking, he's live, thank God, he's speaking, Governor Cuomo's brother. But he has COVID-19. If you look at his eyes, his camera's very close to his face. You can see what I'm talking about. If they had those eyes that people looked at, this is FDNY was saying. Says we have taken a lot of people to a coroner's office because we couldn't revive them. We were called in, we went there, we couldn't revive them, they're done. And so our deaths are extremely underestimated. Or underreported.
The deaths are underestimated.
All of this comes out.
The deaths are underestimated, but it's also hard to put. The flu is responsible for a boatload of deaths every year too. It puts a lot of people.
Yeah, death rate. The flu hits us about the mortality rate is about 0.1%. Okay, we're about 3.4. It's like 30 times more. Big difference. Also, in testing. We have only tested 0.6% of our population.
This is
0.6%.
This is way worse than the flu. But you're a mathematician. Don't believe these bleeped up numbers. We're going to find out a lot more people.
These are the numbers they're reporting.
So what? They're all wrong.
The numbers they're reporting are too low.
You're going to find out that
0.6% is not a good sample size.
Ferry, you're going to find out that a lot more people died from it than they thought. You're also going to find out an awful lot more people had it than they thought.
I'm saying exactly what you're saying.
Well, but the numerator is going to be bigger, too, not just the denominator.
Correct. I understand that. But we've only tested 0.6% of population. Right. That means we have the heat map we have is a farce.
Right,
can't be real.
I ask you this. Sorry, in a bad flu season, I was reading them last night, H3N2 is a bad flu. In a bad flu season, they're going to say we normally have a million people infected. Countrywide.
Right.
What do you think the real number is? How many people do you know have the flu go to the doctor? When they find out that the hospital is full and the doctor's offices are jammed, they say, I'm going to live. I'm not going. I know I got the flu. What's the point of going? I'm drinking my fluids. I'm staying in bed. I'm going to say the number is triple whatever that goes to the hospital.
Well, one of my docs early on who said I called him to say, well, you know, he's in internal medicine, non-infectious disease. What internal medicine? Well, he sees a lot of people. Out of LA. I called him. I said, well, what do you think? He says, whatever you think, whatever you read, multiply by 10.
Yeah.
It's going to be underreported for a while.
Well, we have a guy on the show, Kenny Pulcheri, very popular, love the man. He says, I had it, left New York, I went to Boston, I kept calling my doctor, he says, as long as your fever doesn't get too high, as long as you don't breathe, just stay home, we don't need you here. He said, I went through the whole 10 days, he goes, now I'm fine. He goes, I was never tested, I could never get a test. I don't know, I'm going to get the test for antibodies to make sure I had it. He goes, but I know I did. The doctor knows I did. He says, just don't come here unless you're dying. So that has to be happening all over the place.
Listen, they just now begin to talk about what I told you guys 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Chemical reagents, we're missing them. Now they're saying, well, haven't tested them before because we're out of them, I guess. Other one, there was another report overnight that came that on the strategic stockpiles, we are very, very low to be depleted. Masks, gloves, obviously, ventilators. That was probably number one.
We also have now 51 supply depots. Every friggin' state and the federal government competing, and every governor wants to be on TV, and every and the president wants to be on TV, like all day long. Every guy is a shortage someplace. Guess what? They need to see their face on TV. I mean, a lot. Some people maybe do have a shortage. We got one guy who said he had a shortage last week. Now he's shipping the guy from California. Now he's got too many masks. He's shipping 90 million of them somewhere. Well, a week ago, the guy was squealing like a pig. He didn't have enough. We need, somehow or another, we need to get these guys up. Get a load of this. I got a robocall from
because
my...
Because we don't have a centralized system.
Well, Manny, I get a robocall from my doctor, right? Okay. He starts talking about it, and he's a terrific guy. He goes, his first thing, I'm worried about your health. Make sure if you have any symptoms, you know, call me. We'll talk about them. And if they're not bad, you know, we're going to want you to stay home because I don't want you in a hospital because those are cesspools now. Basically, didn't say that. Yeah. And he said something about make sure, you know, keep your distancing, which I am. Make sure you wash your hands, which I am. He goes, the third thing is mental health. Turn off the TV.
Yeah.
We did that a long time ago.
It is. Some of the social media stuff, too, because they just go back and forth. Some of the people are just making comments. No background to that, you know. And, you know, I'm not making comments. I'm just saying, like, must read. But there's an article. Read the article, okay? See what the article is. Here's another one. Mayo Clinic cardiologist. Inexcusable to ignore hydroxychloroquine side effects. Look at in France. They stopped using them because the effect it had on publications. And he's got some sort of... He owns some... Grampino owns a piece of... Small of these. Very small piece of Sanofi. Who makes this stuff? Keeps on pounding the table every day. I don't think there's anything wrong with this.
Well,
I think
it should be
good. Just add a little zinc to it. It's good for you.
Right, read the details.
We got to have doctors talking. Okay. Nothing else.
Doctors have their own agenda. Doctors don't want anything that hasn't gone through a two-year program. We don't have time for a two-year program here.
But along the way, we kill some people.
I didn't say that, but what you said earlier. Now, think for a second. I'm just telling you what you said.
Tell me.
You said 85% of the people are co-opted with another disease, correct? To die from this, have another problem.
I'm saying, come again.
85% of the people that are, quote, dying from this are co-opted with another disease. The disease might be not even a disease. It could be high blood pressure. It could be, you know, it could be diabetes. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, cancer. I mean, whatever.
What I'm being told is that this is a last resort drug. That is,
you're
in your deathbed and you're really... deep trouble, this probably
the drug has been given,
this will make you very sick.
Okay, the drug that has been, it's been part of a cocktail. It's this drug plus, it's erythromycin, it's an antibiotic and a third drug that have been given to people. Well, what makes you think that the drugs aren't working on some of the other stuff the person has?
Uh-huh.
You don't know whether, that's the big, Audrey knows this guy real well and I know him somewhat well. He's an Asian doctor, Chinese, and he wrote, you know, this, you know, hundreds and hundreds, thousands of page manuscript on Chinese medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the stuff that they do works very well. Now, why can't they get any of this stuff through the FDA? Same reason why you can't get aspirin. You could never get aspirin through the FDA. You know what aspirin does? There isn't a guy on earth, they can tell you what exactly an aspirin works. So these guys can give you a combination of 10 different teas that may seriously help your high blood pressure or something because they have stats going back forever. But because they can't say out of those 10 teas, which four can we throw out or which chemicals actually work, they're never going to get through any place. But the fact is, some stuff works. It has worked forever. These guys have antivirals. As a matter of fact, Audrey went and got a bunch. Now, hopefully we don't have to use them. But they have antivirals. Now, whether they'll work in every person every time. But there's a lot of stuff that just because the FDA puts their nose up on it, the FDA puts their nose up on chiropractors. Yet people go to chiropractors all the time and get help. Yet there isn't an orthopedic surgeon on earth to tell you the chiropractor is worth anything. Yet we all know they are, right? I mean, Fauci has become one of the most brilliant men I've ever known from fighting Reagan and those guys on the AIDS stuff. To me, he's turned into a 30-year bureaucrat. Oh, no, we're not giving anything to anybody. Do we have a 4-year test? We don't have 4 years, right?
Well, What do you want him to do?
Well, I'm saying there's a
I mean, all these guys are worried about their legacy. It's so
well, that's right.
A clean one.
But messed up this
big time because we didn't act fast enough.
But somebody.
There's news now. Hold on. The news that the White House was being warned back in November.
But Fire, we are where we are. We are where we are. We had Fauci and we got Mark Cuban saying nobody leaves the house until this thing's totally eradicated. Fire, that can't happen. We're not going to have a country by then. When everybody goes back to work, there's going to be a risk of you still getting it. Hopefully, it'll be a lot lower than today. And we'll have an awful lot of people who have already had it and are over it. So the curve is not going to be zero.
The only way we can go back to some form of normalcy, to have massive and readily available at all points testing. So you can isolate that and say, you come to work, you don't come to work. And instant test, the 15-minute test. Otherwise, you can't. And then every day you have to take the temperatures. But they all have to wear a mask, and they all have to have...
The temperatures don't do any good. Temperatures are useless.
We need those supplies as well, too.
Fine.
I'm not talking... But that's, if you think about it, it's a linear programming. Those are the minimum requirements. If you cannot meet that, it's a failure. Any single point of failure is going to bring the repopulate people with the virus again in a massive way. There is no other way.
This is the
nature of pandemics. This is not epidemic. This is pandemic.
Just somebody putting a word on it. But the point is, it's not going to be zero risk, Vary. It's not going to be that way.
Pandemics don't come in to be nice with your economy. They come in to torpedo your economy.
I understand that. I'm just saying.
Hello? People have to understand that when the first they were warned, this is maybe coming.
Vary, the rest of the world, we have people that are working now.
And there's tremendous risk. And I take my hat out to them. Is it scary?
Fine, we're telling people to work now. SB Futures.
Listen, I order a pizza. They deliver a pizza, prepaid. Blah blah blah. No touch, all that. By the way, but
all right, Fine, we gotta let you go because these numbers are coming out.
Working.
These numbers are coming out. S&Ps are going wild. SB Futures down 14. And initial jobless claims. Let's wait 1 second while we get them. 1 second, 2 seconds, maybe more than 1 second. But they're, man, you should have them on your tweet. You got them.
It looks like initial jobs claim 6.6 versus 5.5 expected. So same as last week, 6.6.
Wow. They just came up on CNBC. You were faster, man. We'll be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program.
No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber, we'll have David Edelman here in a second. Matty, I almost have to laugh at this one. I'll tell you the story and then you tell me whether you should laugh. SP futures are up 3, NASDAQ futures up 4.25. Dow futures are catching up, but they gotta be up also as well. I won't even give the European numbers because they're still catching up. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 7, call it flat. Shanghai up 10.4%, Hang Seng up 329, 1.4%. Bonds are 0.74 unchanged. Bund minus 0.34, and the Japan minus plus 0.01. We've got oil up 76 cents at 25.85. Now, they were higher than that 2 days ago, so even though they're up, they were going down during the day. Brent 33.48, natural gas 175, RBOB 69 cents a gallon. Gold 17.06 up 22.30, silver up 21 cents. So the numbers come out, Matty. Minus 6.6 versus, or 6.6 people, filed for unemployment claims first time. The number was supposed to be 5. So you would think that before that, the number got leaked maybe or something, the spoos are down 20. Now they rock it up. You think, wow, what could that be? Do people think it was going to be worse? The same moment the Fed comes out and pledges another $2.3 trillion. Like right on the heels of this number. So do you think they picked their time to put the market back up or what?
Yep.
Do you ever believe you'd see something like this?
When Trump was elected, I suspended belief and suspended disbelief. So I believe everything.
Or nothing.
Yes, I just don't. I'm just floating around. I can't believe the country I live in.
I can't either. I can't. I keep trying.
So I just don't watch the news.
I keep trying to make sense out of it, Matty, but I'm struggling, to be honest with you. Anyway, what do you got for us? No sports, traffic, weather. You're going to give us 2 accidents, but there are 2 cars colliding 100 miles an hour, so 8 people are dead. I can read this every morning. Go ahead.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. No traffic to report pretty much anywhere as far as delays or high density on Lakeshore Drive, Edens, Kennedy, Eisenhower, Stevenson, Dan Ryan, I-57, Bishop Ford, all looking great. Low travel times. We did have an earlier crash out in the northwest suburbs. That's all clear now. Only have one crash in the area, and that's over in Carroll Stream out west. Lies Road at Gary Avenue, there's a crash, but everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine early, but much colder temperatures than we've had the last couple of days. A high of just 46, and we could have some rain later on. Right now it's sunny and 41 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 73 today. Right now it's clear and 54. The only sports note is the Bulls apparently are hiring Nuggets general manager Arturis Karnasovas to take over as executive vice president of basketball operations. So he will run the Bulls front office, it appears, going forward. Chief.
So what do we used to say at Pullman and in grad school, though? David, how are you? The dreaded one-on-one-on-one reporting relationship, how it never works. So what do you think the Bulls is, one-on-one-on-one-on-one?
It's a great question. I can't imagine it working. The White Sox are doing something similar, and, you know, maybe they are turning it around with Rick Hahn sort of calling the shots, even though Kenny Williams is still there. The Bulls are going to try to do something similar where Paxton's still there, but this guy's going to be calling the shots.
All right, so Reinsdorf talks to Paxton. Paxton talks to this guy, and then this guy talks to, you know, who's the other guy?
Gar Foreman. And I don't know if Foreman is going to be out or if he's just going to be a scout or if he's still going to be in the front office. I'm not sure.
Well, the only way that would make sort of sense is if Paxton, this guy did everything to do with everything except player personnel and Foreman retained that job, but it doesn't sound like that's what they're doing.
That would be awful if that was the case because Paxton and Foreman have been doing player personnel for a decade and it's been horrendous.
All right. David, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Did you catch the Fed pledging another $2.3 trillion on the same airwave?
I did. It would have been announced simultaneously, but they had to switch reporters. It couldn't have been more than 3 seconds.
Yeah, it's really something, isn't it?
So it was planned. They knew the number, obviously. It goes back to the Chiefs' commentary for the last 3-4 years, which it took me about a year to accept that they leaked the numbers and they had the numbers before, but it's obvious now. If anything proved it, it was today.
Yeah. Who do you think bought? Banks? Banks have zero morals, so they would buy if they knew.
Yeah, a lot of nephews had their 529 plans enriched, I can tell you that.
Yeah. Well, it's an odd world we live
in. And I shouldn't be sexist. Nephews and nieces.
Yep. You know, can't be sexist on this stuff. The ladies will steal as much as the guys, I think. Or maybe not as much as the guys. I don't know.
Well, they have to keep it at arm's length.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have a trust. You know, hey, trustee, you know, I can't buy from my account. They'll lock me up. So, you know, that niece and nephew that I got, you know, enrich them, get those futures bought ahead.
Yep. When you look at, well, I'm going to ask you about the chart story, and you always say that the charts basically include the news. When the news gets more, shall we say, disparate, and it's no longer a continual. Well, most of the models will tell you to believe your capital asset pricing models, even your option models and so forth. There's this steady stream of news that virtually everybody sees, right? Well, obviously that's not the case anymore. And you're actually going to have some serious binomial, with some of these companies. Some of them are going to be in or some of them are going to be out maybe, which clearly is pretty tough to do in a normal distribution curve because that's not normal. That's binomial, right? How do you take account of that? I mean, right now I think you could still look at the S&P because there's going to be 500 stocks. But how do you put one of these oil companies that's deep in debt, or how do you put one of the airline companies or whatever on a chart and say, well, it looks like here and there when it might be, yeah, the stock will be there, but it won't be the same stock or something.
Well, you've asked,
yeah, I know,
literally.
I
know. I know you, but you've asked about 16 different questions in there. First of all, my overall commentary is now that, you know, the average person or even the expert on TV or the analyst or whatever, you know, is at a loss for this kind of volatility and these kind of quick movements. It's not even the volatility that, you know, the Dow can rally 100 points, 150 points in the last 5 minutes of the session, or decline 200 points. You know, nobody has seen this before. So everyone's a chartist. You know, I mentioned Monday that two top analysts, quote-unquote top analysts, on Fast Money last Friday said, absolutely, the bottom will be threatened near-term in the next few days and probably S&P going to 16, 1700. And that was my clue that, you know, you better be long on Monday morning. So, I mean, everyone's a chartist now, and 50% retracements and one-third retracements and 6.618 Fibonacci, you know, this and this and that. Everyone's a chartist. But I look at, you know, strong levels of resistance and support and how price momentum oscillators get extended upside or downside at those levels. And I'm not saying, you know, praise me, you know, nobody else is a good chartist. There's plenty of good technicians out there, but there's many, many pretenders and bad ones. So, you know, we said literally, if you remember, at, you know, 3,100, if that didn't hold on the S&P, who knows how far down. And it was not apparent that the virus was going to be that big a thing at the time. And it went, you know, another, you know, 1,000 points.
Yep.
And, you know, on the way down, there was a dead spot, 2350, where if that didn't hold, it was going to go big time beyond that. It did. On the way back up, I said, you know, at 2350, the shorts had to stop the market, and if not, they were going to be in trouble. They did. They didn't, and the market shut up. Now, this on Monday, I did say that 2635, about 5% above where we were at the time, should offer big time resistance, and hedging 5% of the portfolio at that point, you know, might be a good idea, or even a small speculative short. And being frank, that one did not hold. So, you know, if somebody is experienced, and hopefully knock wood, some talent, you know, learned over time, you know, if you're right 3 or 4 times, or, you know, 3 or 5 times, that's about all you can do.
Well, I mean, I guess when you learn this stuff in school, and you know, you've been in the pits and doing this stuff for as long as I have, there's the whole breakdown in the models is that there's a continuous stream of information that everybody's right. That everybody is, the theory is that everybody's gets. Well, we know clearly not everybody gets all the information, right? I mean, we're seeing that more and more. And also, when you talk about earnings, you got a company, you know, pick IBM. It's been around forever. IBM, the earnings are going to be 250. Well, they might come in at 260. They might come in at 240, in which case, you know, a stock, I'll pick a number. It's trading 150. It might be 160. It might be 140. Well, you know, if you're long or short, or you're in trading that day, that could be a big day for you, a bad day for you. There's a lot going on there. But even that, an earnings number comes every quarter, so it's kind of a disparate type of thing. It's not but then your regular information is, you know, maybe another company that's in the same industry comes out with info or something else, or there's a, you know, who knows what, a typhoon hits one of the little factories, or something happens to one of the people that are the big client. These are information pieces that kind of come all the time, and they really don't affect whether you think IBM's going to be here a decade from now. They're just little blips, some good blips, some bad blips, and that's what we're sort of used to. But you don't normally see, you know, David and Matt's oil company trading $10, and oh, by the way, they got a meeting with a bank next week that they owe a bazillion dollars, and the bank has a 30% chance of saying, screw you guys, we're just taking over, and we're not going to renew the loan. I mean, we're going to stop people from driving. Or, I mean, the pieces of information are now becoming, you know, let's just put it this way, bigger than what I think the models were designed to handle. How is that a fair
statement? Yeah, no, I get it. And to your point, I mean, the cruise lines, Carnival Cruise, you know, I forget, it went down to about $9 or whatever. And, you know, I don't think anybody's booking cruises right now, even for the fall or winter next spring. But you know, obviously they needed an infusion of capital to basically survive, along with, you know, whatever government loan programs could support. So they went to the, you know, private equity market and said, hey, look, we got ships, we got, you know, engines, we got rooms, we got this, we got an inventory of, well, food probably perished, but whatever, whatever they had as collateral, you know, can you give us $13 billion? And there were a lot of doubters that said, hey, it's not, and I'm not long Carnival Cruise, nor am I a proponent at all. So just picking an example. Can you give us $13 billion? The answer was yes. They got it. And, of course, the stock, you know, well, I mean, it went down to $9 from wherever it was, 50 or whatever, so I'm not, again, saying to buy it. But it rocketed up 20%, you know, when the market had anticipated that they'd need a further government bailout, that the private equity markets, debt markets would be close to them. It didn't happen.
Well, I look at even the one I've been talking about for a while here. Well, I'm talking about two because they're right in front of me. I mean, I've got Halliburton, you know, big company, been around forever. Dick Cheney's company, for lack of a better term. You know, and he's in this thing, and he, no, I don't know if he's still in it. I mean, maybe he isn't. Who the hell knows? But the stock goes from, you know, 38, 35 down to, you know, 15, 14, 13. It goes down to six and a half. Now, David, unless I'm sitting in a boardroom or I somehow can hack into the CFO's computer, I don't know whether this place going under or not going under. 650, and now everybody's going, yeah, I got to buy these dips, got to buy these dips. Okay, so if you'd have bought it at 650, now it's trading 960. Well, oil's back to $27. I don't know that $27 is enough for Halliburton's, for somebody to call up today and say, send me some equipment. I don't know how much undersea drilling they're doing. I mean, I can't be imagining there's too much. I have no idea whether these guys are a keeper or not. I would love to have bought some at 650 for my clients and sell it this morning at 960. Yeah, well, you know, everybody can take 50% in a week and a half. It's easy on the eyes and easy on the pocketbook, right? But I'm not sure that whether it was worth 650, whether it's worth 960. Does anybody have any idea?
Well, on that one especially, I mean, actually, on March 18th, looking at the chart, the low of March 18th was 4.25.
Four and a quarter, that's right. You're right. It was under five.
And closed that day at 4.60 and closed below all previous lows. So it was an all-time low. It was a spike to new lows. And it closed, what, 30 cents off the all-time lows?
Yeah.
I mean, and then it was followed by three inside days. No, you never could have bought it. I, of course, you could have bottom fish, and obviously all the price momentum oscillators were extremely extended. But a spike to new lows, I mean, unless you're really standing in front of a train and saying, I hope it stops, you couldn't have. Now, on the following day, it gapped higher. That day, it opened at 592 and took out the highs of the previous 6 days. That day, if you wanted to take a shot, you know, at 590, you could have, and literally there was not really much that gave you a sell signal since then. So no, you couldn't have bought it off the technicals at 4.25, 4.50, at $596. You could have. Would you have? I didn't. So
well,
who knows?
Somewhere between 4.25 and 9.55, where we got a trade this morning. Stock's up 80 cents this morning, which would have been 20% when it was 4.25, right? So
it's more than doubled since March 18th.
So somebody somewhere in here, they must have got wind of one of these Fed or somebody's program. Now, how in the hell would you and I and a regular investor know whether at the last minute they're going to get a nickel from somebody or not? I mean, this is becoming trading. The insider trading has gotten a whole new word for it with all this crap going on, I think.
Yeah, and for all we know, maybe it wasn't even insider trading. Maybe it was a ton of shorts that looked at the technicals and said, they're all out of whack, this company isn't going under, we better cover our shorts. We don't know.
Well, how does somebody determine 2 weeks ago, after really a year and a half of just drubbing the thing, how does somebody determine last week, oh, no, they're not going out of business, when oil was $20 a barrel, and there can't be, we were talking on the air about people at the Permian Basin selling oil for $5 a barrel because they got a $15 basis risk. I mean, how does anybody know that nobody's going out of business? Oh, no, these guys aren't going out of business.
Well, again, yeah. And I'm not saying, hey, again, I didn't buy a share, and I didn't even buy it at 590, so I'm not saying any. This is hindsight, and whatever. But let's just say for sake of argument that I had been short into that print. On that day, March 18th, 20% is kind of the guideline for extension.
Yeah.
Some say oversold, whatever. I hate the term, but extension. On that day, the short-term percent K of the stochastics was 2.7. So 20% extended, it got to 2.7. The intermediate term was 3.07. You added low single digits. I mean, literally, it almost had to go to zero for further downside. And on the same day, the relative strength index, again with kind of a benchmark at 20, was 13. So, I mean, let's put it this way. It would have been a hard buy, but if you were short and asking me for a consultation, I would have said, get your butt out of there and take the money.
Yeah, I would agree. I look back at, we got a Twitter question for you in a second, David. I look back 2008 when we had the fiasco, or must have been 2009, we hit the bottoms. AIG, it certainly is one of the most prestigious at the time, had some of the biggest positions in these, collateralized debt obligations, and they did a lot of the stuff with the, where people are buying insurance on Italy and they were selling it.
Yeah, the leverage.
Yeah, the leverage stuff. So these guys look, except for some dramatic move out of Paulson, which saved them only because he saved his own company, Goldman Sachs, in my opinion. So they, all the rest of the company, the insurance companies, I think I did 4 or 5 of them, David. I did Allstate, State Farm, but there were a few in there. And I did like 4 or 5 of them, and they're trading like $4. So I bought some of the stock, I sold some puts, I sold some calls, where if I would have had to buy the rest of the stock, I was buying it from below zero. Right? So I put these on, and I'm thinking one or two of these clunks is going out. But the prices are so good that I'll be all right. Even if 3 of them survive, I'll still make a few bucks for my guys. You know, it won't be great, but it'll be better than sharp stick in the eye. So all of a sudden, couldn't have been a week later, all 5 of them like double. So since I had sold the calls, I made, I'm going to say, 40, 50% in the week. But it was 40, 50% on $4. It wasn't like, it wasn't right. 40, 50% on 100. So it was, it was okay, but it was nothing compared to what, if I would have, quote, known, then for somebody to say 2 months later, gee, Chief, you knew they weren't all going out of business. No, I didn't. How would anybody have known that? I mean, well, AIG looked like it was going down a rat hole, and these guys aren't as big as those guys.
Right.
So the idea that, we all knew they weren't going to, wait a minute. What plug are you sticking your finger into that you get to know all this stuff? Most people don't know that. I didn't know at 4.25. That could have been the absolute death knell for Halliburton.
I get it. And I said it. You had to think that it was going for those technicals to be that extended to those kind of levels. Although the price action said, it could have been a death warrant. If nothing else, it was maybe a signal that, hey, you let's just say for sake of argument, you wrote it from, 18 down to 4.25 or whatever, or even at $5 when it became a penny stock or whatever. Hey, you know what? Maybe I ought to lighten up a little bit here. But you're right. Hey, there's nothing to say. when Bear Stearns went from 102 to 2, and Jamie Dimon said, I'll take that, and the government made him pay 10, it was on its way to zero without a rescue, and even then it, lost over 90% of its value.
And there are people we know and love on the show, 2 days before on CNBC, said this thing is a steal at $32, because what's Bear Stearns doing at $32? And the reason why those people said that is they had no idea that Bear Stearns had these off-balance sheet type things, and why would you know? They wouldn't be in.
If you weren't Deutsche Bank, that was on the other side.
Yeah, you wouldn't know. So, and all of a sudden, all those people who thought 32 had to be the bottom here, well, it wasn't. It was 2, and then I guess they ended up getting 10, right?
Right.
All right, so David, we're up 32, so the Fed has put a 55-point move on this thing, even with the most disgusting unemployment claims we've ever seen. I just think that economy going in the rat hole and Fed printing money to save it, if we don't get the economy to come around, the Fed will not be able to save it. That's just me. You can't print that much money.
I can't tell you one way or the other. It's gotten over that 2635, which I pointed at Monday, and right now I'd have to say if it retests that, it's, you know, maybe a little bit of a buy. Upside, though, it's already extended. All the price momentum oscillated, not severely, not like Halliburton was downside, but it's pretty extended. I still think that, you know, maybe up around 2875 in there, I would hedge another 5% of portfolios that need hedging. The play to me is gold. And, you know, for however long I've been doing the show, 10 years, at least 8.5, I've been a bear in gold. But, I mean, all this $8 trillion of stimulus and whatever, I got to believe in floating all this debt. They're just printing money or whatever it is. If you look at June gold, it is a massive inverted head and shoulders. Massive.
All right, David, we got to go, buddy. We'll talk about that on Monday, buddy, because we won't
be
back till Monday.
1,700 is goodbye.
Wow. We'll be back on Monday. No show tomorrow. It's Good Friday. Markets are closed. Have a good weekend, everybody.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.